Hey, Potters. Welcome to episode 316 of Cosplay, the podcast for all things cosplay.
Hooray.
Happy summer, everybody. I think today, it's either today or tomorrow, I think, that's the official start to summer in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah. The official quote-unquote start date. I think it's today. I get so confused.
What is it? I want to say this is the astrological start to summer, but we've already had the meteorological start to summer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, it's hot and humid everywhere and cosplay is miserable.
Please, conventions, have your events indoors. Please don't make us go outdoors.
And also, please make sure your air conditioning works.
Yeah, honestly, when I think back to it, for the number of times I've done outdoor photo shoots in like the height of summer, even then, we limited our time to like 10 minutes before we went inside to cool down. Like, we just knew, even back then, even when I was more capable of handling the outdoors for longer, it was like, listen, this is getting too hot. We're going in.
Yes. Most of my costumes are very layered, very complicated, not meant for outdoors whatsoever. So outdoors photo shoots were not fun.
You'd think we would have learned by now, but we really haven't.
I have learned by now.
I haven't.
Since the last time we spoke, Potters, I actually went to the Renaissance Festival.
Woohoo!
Because that is my shtick. And I dressed appropriately. I had a very lightweight costume that had very thin lining. It was made of cotton or poly cotton. And I did the whole sunblock thing. And I made sure that I hydrated and I took care of myself. And I had shade and everything for my cosplay. And it was actually pretty darn good. It worked out. Now, granted, I stayed away from the sun as much as possible. But it was still pretty toasty, admittedly, and so I was very happy that I chose the costume that I did. So stay hydrated out there. For those of you who are venturing out in the great outdoors for your photo shoots this summer, because convention season is still in full swing. But something else I wanted to mention about going to Ren Faire is I experienced trinket trading for the first time.
Oh, cool!
And I had not really known that this was such a thing. And I could very much see it starting to take place at anime conventions, just based on what the trinket trading is, because it's a way to show your fandom to other people or show like what you're geeky about in small, tiny, charm-like form. And they're meant to be very inexpensive things. This is not to take the place of the Dealer's Den or the Artist Alley, because we love our Dealer's Den and Artist Alley friends. Please keep them at conventions. It was nice to be able to trade little things that said like, oh, I'm a fan of this. I'm a fan of this anime. I'm a fan of this show. It's like, oh, it's a very lightweight, non-committal way to have interactions between fans, but it's not so committal that introverts will feel uncomfortable, because hi, giant introvert here. I don't like talking to other strangers randomly, even if they're fans of the same show. But this was a really lightweight way of just having really quick, geeky conversation, and then you part and you go your own ways, and it was great. Like, I could do with more of this, with focus on the interaction and the experience part of the con, basically, without taking away from the vendors and that sort of thing. If you end up doing trinket trading at any con, please do not try and pay vendors with it, because it is not money. Please do not tip people with it. It is not money. And please do not try and use things that vendors would sell as trinkets, because that's taking away commerce from them. These are supposed to be like little inexpensive things. But it's a ton of fun, and I highly encourage it. So that was fun. Shall I show my cosplay updates?
Yeah, while you're showing your cosplay updates, I do want to add a little amendment to them. So for conventions, yes, definitely over the last couple of years, I've seen it be a really big thing for ribbon trading as well as stickers. Yes. Stickers have really bloomed in a lot of convention scenes now. So it's like, that's a great way of kind of looking at the trinket trading thing too, because it's something that's small.
Yes.
It's fairly inexpensive. You can get a large quantity of it and it can all be customized to your thing, your fandom.
Yes.
I know West Coast tends to be bigger on the ribbons, but it has definitely been spreading across the state, here in the US at least. I don't know how it is in other countries. Yes. So I'm just speaking from the US. And then stickers, I've just been finding everywhere, just randomly popping up of people being like, hey, we're doing a sticker trade at this convention, at this convention, and this convention.
Yep. Just make sure that they are Safe for all audiences because you don't know the age of the person that you're interacting with. And two, make sure that the con allows it because some places do ban it for whatever reason they give. It's totally up to them if it's allowed. But just make sure it's allowed before you start doing it because you don't want to put yourself at risk of being removed from the convention over stickers or ribbons. So.
Yeah, I know some convention centers get a little picky about the stickers. They've been a little bit more aggressive over it because they just don't want to deal with any leftover clutter that might be on the floors or on the walls or whatnot. So just be mindful of that.
Yes. So I have my belts, my lovely Jedi belts, which you can't really see the shine in the light, but these are vinyl. I have two of them, actually. Here is the larger belt that goes underneath it. You can see this is almost more of an obi width, which is kind of the point, but it's supposed to have one belt go over the other, like this. It does not have the buckles on it. I do still need to run an iron over it again, not only to get some of the creases out, but because what I ended up having to do with the belts, these are double-sided, incidentally, is that this vinyl has a really horrible, like felt-ish backing that is very hairy and pills and frays at the edges really, really badly. Not to mention that where the vinyl is black, the backing is white for whatever reason, which obviously you would not want to see on a belt that is black. You don't want to see the backing. And so I ended up having to mix some acrylic paint with fabric medium and take a paintbrush and go in between the entire length of the belt on both sides so that I could cover up the backing so that you wouldn't see it. And now, of course, it looks terrible because now I have the little hairy bits coming out the side seam of the belt. So now I'm going to have to take scissors and trim the whole
Trim it.
thing all the way down so that it's clean. But once that's done, then all these need is just the buckles and the binding bolts, and then belts are done.
Yay.
So that was nice and easy. I am very glad that I had just enough vinyl to get this done. And the next thing that I am in progress working on, which I don't have here because my table is sitting just past my computer, is the tabard, which you all saw that I found my fabric for the other day, and I have gotten the muslin to where I want it so that it'll fit on me as best as it's going to be able to fit without seams because tabards don't have them. The only problem I ran into is that the edging on the tabard needs to be gold because of the character's color scheme, and I cannot find my Jacquard pots anywhere. I had two. I had one of gold and one of silver, and I cannot find either one anywhere in any of my stuff. I suspect that I must have thrown them out at one point. Maybe they dried out. So before I can finish the tabard, I'm going to have to order another set of Jacquard pots so that I can finish the painting on the edging because my only other option is this stuff. Rip Joanne's counter increased by one. But this is four-way stretch.
Oh, no, don't use that on the tabard.
And this is not, yeah, this is not going to work well. Even though the color is correct, the texture is very much not. This is not meant for edging, which is exactly what I need it for. And so I'm going to have to buy the paints. And I'll have to wait till those come in, which there's a bit of a shortage right now on paints. So I can cut all my pieces out, I can stitch them, I just can't paint the edges until I get my paint in. And then that will finish off the tabard. I did find my sash. In the fabric bag that I had it being kept in. Now the only other thing that I will need to get fabric for, assuming that I just wear ready-made store-bought pants, is I have to order more fabric for the tunic because what I have is very stiff quilter's poly cotton. Thanks Walmart for selling only Party City quilting fabrics instead of garment fabrics. And so I'm gonna have to order proper garment fabrics for that tunic so that I can make the tunic. I don't think I'm gonna make the cloak right now. I think I'm just gonna hold off. I'm just gonna have the base layers of the costume. That's gonna be it. And then I will have to get my lightsaber. Unless I want to go and drill out PVC pipe, because you all saw in the last show that I had my acrylic rod and I had my little stick of a PVC pipe, of a handle. And unfortunately, the acrylic rod has a larger diameter than the PVC pipe handle does. The two don't go together. And so I'm going to have to either get new PVC pipe that is bigger, or I'm going to have to MacGyver something. And of course, you know how much I love MacGyvering things. This is something I don't think I can MacGyver very well. And so we'll see. I mean, this is just basically to hold me this year until I can order a proper lightsaber and
Sure,
such.
sure.
But with luck, I mean, this being June and the convention that I want to wear it to being in September, 3 months should be enough for me to finish things out. I've already got my wig, I've got my accessories, I should be good to go. Just
Great.
assuming that the weather cooperates, as
Great.
is always the case with conventions. It is mostly indoors, as far as I know, and I hope to stay indoors just in case. September is like that weird month where you never know what you're going to get. It could
Yeah.
be boiling hot, it could be thunderstorms and like 50 degrees, you never know. But it'll be comfy.
Good.
There won't be any armor, which is shocking for
That's
Amber.
shocking for you.
That's going to feel weird. But it will enable me to use my camera much better
Good.
in more comfortable positions, and I won't have to worry about breaking things when I crawl on the ground, as I need to get, those cosplay shots that I need to. So,
Right.
and that's the important part. Be comfortable. I'm even wearing tennis shoes.
Woohoo!
I
Smart.
know that's not very Jedi-like. Eventually, I need Jedi boots, but tennis shoes this time around. But yeah, that's what I've got thus far. I am slowly making progress. I would have made more progress, except that I had to stop and work on a couple things for Ren Faire. The circlet that I normally wore broke entirely. Foam does eventually do that. And so I remade my circlet, and then because I don't like wearing heavy cloaks to shield myself from the evil Daystar all the time, because that tends to overheat you, it was recommended to me to make a parasol. And so I spent a lot of time on YouTube looking up how to make parasols. And it's actually not that complicated. I'm guessing that a lot of cosplayers do this. They can make their own custom parasols. So I spent a lot of time starting to use up some of my scrap fabric, actually,
Good.
as lining for my parasol, so that I will have that ready for next year. Ta-da! Your turn.
You have so many updates. Okay, I actually have an update. Woohoo! I pulled out the sewing machine because the next part of my current project, which is still being very, very secretive because I don't know if it's going to work. And if it works, great. And if it fails, that's great too, because I learned a lot. I have to make leggings for myself. I have a legging pattern that I made for myself maybe 13, 15 years ago, long enough to the point of where I needed to check it to make sure that everything still fit. And even though I went through and did the measurements and the measurements seemed correct, it was still one of those where it's fine on paper, but until I transfer this to fabric and sew it all up, I don't know if this is still actually going to work because it might just need little micro adjustments or it might need a complete overhaul. I don't know. So I pulled out some wonderful fabric that I've had stashed for quite some time and never did anything with this wonderful Christmas Raptor fabric. I think I have shown this eons ago with the intent of making leggings out of this, but just never got around to it. And finally, I was like, it is time. The time has come. And look how awesome they are. Isn't that great? But yes, went ahead and, threw this together. It took me less than an hour, and my pattern still fits perfectly. I don't have to make a single adjustment. And it's even set up correctly where if I want to turn the bottoms into cuffs or if I just want to make them footed, I can do that too. It's really easy. I was like, wow, cool. So now that I know that this works perfectly and fits very comfortably, I can transition this to the actual legging fabric, which is very similar to this as far as like texture and stretch. This is a four-way stretch. This is fully spandex. So at least I know it'll work just fine. But it was very comforting to know that a pattern that I had made that long ago still works and still fits. And I know that if I need to make tiny little adjustments, I can make those tiny little adjustments. So I felt very proud of myself for making a really good pattern. And the fun thing with me, because I like to try to not have as many seams as possible just because it's easier on my brain at times. The pattern for this, there's only three stitches when you think about it. It's connecting the two pieces together and then doing one long stitch from one side of the leg down to the other side. Three in total. That's it. No outside seams. And it still fits really, really nicely. If I want to get a slightly different look to it, I could do an outside seam if I wanted to, but then I have to cut a little bit of extra fabric to make up for that difference. But yeah.
Yes.
But other than that, I was like, oh, cool. I'm glad that this still works. I'm so happy. And now I have comfy rafter
Exactly. You have a
leggings.
usable set of Dino Christmas leggings.
Dino Christmas leggings that have no purpose at this time of year, but hey, maybe Christmas in July. So there
It's
you go.
a manifestation charm. You
There we
have
go.
it because that's what brings the cold weather in July.
I would love to have that cold weather in July. That would be fantabulous because the next portion of the costume that I'm working on, other than the leggings, it's a lot of heavy fabric, a lot of intricacies, and whatever I can do to keep things cool, I am down with it.
I am all for making sure that costumes can breathe, whether it's hot or cold. Breathability is
It's
huge.
a big deal.
I find myself, as I get older and more experienced in cosplay, more willing to sacrifice some accuracy for
Yes.
comfort.
Yes. Yeah. The comfort and being able to move, to sit, to eat, to walk, to go to the bathroom, and just not feeling overheated after 20 minutes of use. Like, if you are a younger cosplayer, that may sound like, oh, shouldn't that be obvious? It isn't really obvious to most people. It's, I'm putting on the costume to try to be the character. And in doing so, you kind of trap yourself in that costume, unable to do a lot of normal human bodily functions. And it's really important to think about how you're going to move, how you're going to act in the costume, because at the end of the day, you don't want to feel miserable because of that costume. You want to have fun in it. So try to make things or purchase things that are going to help you feel comfortable.
I will chalk one up to maintainability as well.
Yes.
Being able to easily store your costume without having to worry about creases getting set in it, or being able to machine wash parts of your costume, or being able to clean your costume whenever you need to. If you just need to spot clean a couple of things, if you need to repair small things like to sew up a little seam. Being able to easily maintain your costume is also a really helpful thing.
As I immediately start thinking about my mummy costume with Evelyn, and the whole thing is made out of linen because I was trying to be historically accurate. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of starch on that costume.
Oh, the whenever I do my elven embroidery on costumes with puff paint and I have the gems on there, those costumes automatically instantly become dry clean only. I cannot use
Yeah.
any sort of heat. I cannot iron them.
Nope.
I cannot steam them. I cannot use any sort of heat or moisture anywhere near those things because it will immediately, the gems will pop off and then the puff paint will start to reconstitute itself and it may smear or run worse. And so I had to be very careful. I did iron my costume. So, gold star for me. Make
Yay.
sure whenever, before you go to conventions, make sure that you either iron or press your costume, whichever is
Please,
applicable.
please, please, please.
Mine had a ton of wrinkles in it, and I wasn't about to go out there with a giant wrinkly costume, so I very carefully ironed my costume, the whole thing. And I highly recommend doing so with your own cosplays as much as you can. If you can't iron them, steamers are a good alternative.
Yes.
Or if you have to, then, dry clean it. If that's what you have to do, but do take care of your cosplay. It will last you a long time.
I say this as somebody who's been to the dry cleaners before. If you're concerned about the people at the dry cleaning place being like, "What is this?" They don't care. They genuinely don't care. They're like, "Okay, it's a garment that needs to be dry cleaned." If it helps them out if you tell them what the material is so they know exactly how to take care of it. But other than that, they don't care if it's a costume. They do wedding dresses. They do quinceañera dresses. They probably have seen weirder things.
I promise you they handle other costumes
Yes.
because the staff at Ren Faire all have to get theirs dry cleaned. People who do theater have to get their costumes dry cleaned. So I promise you they've seen costumes before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that doesn't even count the stuff that people wear for themed weddings and such. So don't feel ashamed or embarrassed whatsoever. And like I said, it'll help it last a long time. I
Yes.
think most of my costumes on average last between 5 and 10 years.
Yeah, the only reason I don't keep a costume around, it's not because of wear and tear. It's I just don't see myself using it anymore.
Or for me, if I don't fit into it anymore, then if I can't resize it, then I will take it apart and use it for the components. So I still geese all my stuff and reclaim what I can.
Yeah. I find it funny that really the only costume I can think of is my April O'Neil from Ninja Turtles. And even with that costume, like the bodysuit was still fine. Like it was still in great condition. It probably could have had a couple more wearings. What caused me to get rid of it was the boots were wearing out to the point of there was no way to salvage this. And trying to find replacements was going to cost way too much time and way too much money. So at that point, it was like, if I want to ever wear this costume again, I'm just going to give it a complete overhaul. I'll start from scratch. I know how to make it better and much more stronger, more durable, better fabrics, and I could just do it that way. But it was like, no, it wasn't because the thing was falling apart. It was just accessories that I can't quite replace at this moment because those were falling apart that I didn't make. So,
All right, any other cosplay updates?
no more cosplay updates. We can get straight into our topic.
For those watching, today's topic is it worth going to the same convention multiple times or one and done? I am very much team one and done.
This is kind of an interesting nuanced topic because, and this is something that we'll discuss in a future episode too. Conventions really have changed since post, sort of still here, COVID pandemic. There's a shift in content and direction, paneling, all of that stuff. So, what we used to do to go to conventions every single year, we probably wouldn't recommend doing it like it is now because things really have changed. And it's almost like you get the go one time, you get a taste of the experience. That's all you really need to do. I would argue that bigger events like Fan Expo, that's a one and done. Every Fan Expo is the same Fan Expo. There is no difference between any of them. There might be a couple of different guests based on certain cities, but a Fan Expo is a Fan Expo is a Fan Expo. There is no difference. Once you've been to San Diego Comic-Con once, that's San Diego Comic-Con. It doesn't change. You've been to Anime Expo once, that's Anime Expo. It doesn't change. I would argue that smaller conventions are probably the ones that are worth going multiple times because some of them might be new and they might be changing, they might be growing, and you can go with the changes and see how they're adjusting to the crowds and accommodating people's needs. Or even if it's one that's been around for, like, let's say 10, 15, 20 years, it might be worth it because this is your small town con. You want to support it. You want to give it your love. And so it's worth it to you to go multiple times.
I guess I would caveat my answer by saying if the con does not change, one and done. If there are major enough changes, then I might be willing to go back. But I end up having the same issue with Ren Faire in that when you go, and this is for anime conventions too, it's a lot of the same vendors and shops, it's a lot of the same guests because those guests may be popular. They may bring on a lot of attendees. Just like those shops may end up selling a lot of merch. And those panels tend to be very well-attended panels because they're the 101 panels or they're the fandom panels where there's always an audience. Because there are constantly new people, there's constantly churn in the attendees at cons. It's not always the same people that go every year, they always get people who have never been. And so there's always an audience for those things. So I can see why conventions keep them, but I would like to see more change, more than just one or two new panels and then everything else is the same. More than one or two new dealers and everything else is the same. More than one or two new guests and all the other guests are the same. Like, I go to cons for the experience, to go to panels, to go window shop at the various vendors, and if I really see something I like, then I might purchase it. Very rarely do I go for cosplay guests unless it's a this guest only goes to cons maybe once every few years kind of guest. Whenever there are big things like that, I might be inclined to go. But if everything else is the same except for those one or two things, I'm a lot less inclined because I can remember my experience from last year. I know what that shop sells. I know who that guest is. I've heard them in their various animes. I've been to those panels. I don't really need to go to those panels again. And I pretty much just go to spend time with friends at that point. But it can be a very expensive way to spend time with friends. And so I'd rather just spend my time with friends on the weekends just regularly outside of the con rather than using my con time to do that, in which case for the most part, for Ren Fairs, for conventions, fan and anime, one and done is generally my MO unless something major is there to draw me back.
It's almost like with fan conventions, I want them to be experiences. And I know that's kind of a broad term, but I don't want the same thing every single time when I go. And it is a lot of the repeat guests and panels and content and even the same vendors in the dealer's room, the same vendors in the artist room. Stuff needs to change out. We got to have a little bit of something. And I know with artists in particular, sometimes they get miffed at, well, I can only vend at this convention one time a year because the next year they have a whole new set. I get for them that's a hit on their income and that can be kind of challenging, especially if you're a local. But as attendees, if we go to the same event year after year after year and it's the same 70 artists every single time, there's no incentive to buy. And I would imagine that your sales would be lower anyway. Yes, there are new people attending, sure, but a lot of the regulars that want to support the con, it's like, well, it's the same thing all the time. Why do I want to keep coming back to this when I can save that $150 ticket and just go have fun with my friends for 20, 30 bucks somewhere else? What would be the point of that? I would prefer it if conventions really just think about what kind of programming they're offering, what new things they can bring to the table, be willing to change out the dealer's hall and the artist's alley to get new vendors in there, different vendors in there, be mindful of their vendors so you don't have 20 of them selling the same t-shirts or the same slop. Make sure that they're all unique and qualified and all that good fun stuff. And then also look at your guest list too, like especially in Texas. Because we have a whole bunch of voice actors here, we see the same 10 voice actors everywhere. No shade to them whatsoever, but you got to change it out. It's okay to bring in other guests. We want to see other guests.
I would say two things. One is that I would like it very much if conventions tried to cater to a bit broader range of an audience so that it's not just new attendees. They're like, well, these new attendees haven't seen these same people before, so we're going to keep them around because they're popular. You have other attendees that have been there before that would also like to have experiences at your con, and chances are, if they're older attendees, they may have a bit more disposable income too. If you were to use some of these feedback sessions that they have at cons or use your online forums, your social media and such, to ask people what they want to see instead of assuming what they want to see, instead of just following the same trends that all the other cons are following, because that's how you get the same guests everywhere and the same vendors everywhere if you're just following what everybody else is doing. Ask people what they want to see and ask a broad swath of your audience, not just the same people that you may think that you need to cater to each time. And the second thing is that I know that cons will say, well, if you want change, then you need to be the change you want to see in the world. You need to offer panels. You need to tell us what voice actors you want us to bring. You need to do this. It's a two-way street. It's not just that attendees need to stand up and offer things, which, yes, I agree. Attendees are the ones who power a lot of the content, a lot of the panels, a lot of the fandom. As a con, you need to provide that opportunity and that support. So you need to reach out to the community. You need to make it where there is incentive for panelists to offer panels and not just make it where panelists have to pay their own way through the con and get very little, if no compensation for doing their panels, or if you say you only get compensation if you do 8 hours worth of work for us. A 2 hour panel is a ton of work, let me tell you. A 1 hour panel is a ton of work. You can easily do like 8 hours worth of prep for a 1 hour panel. So it's not like you're doing all 8 hours at the con, you still have to prep. So you need to incentivize, to meet them halfway, to make it so that it's very easy and very encouraged for the community to offer content. Perhaps you could put out a list and say, here are the things people are interested in seeing panels for. Is anybody interested in offering panels for this? You also could help make the criteria for getting accepted for panels transparent. Make it so that people know exactly what it is that you want out of a panel for your con, what standards they have to meet, how they need to submit, if it's like a video demo or something. But make it very clear what you want out of a panel. Don't just lock it behind secrecy and random web portals and things like that. Make it very easy for people to do this. And then also make it easy for people to see those panels afterwards. If you can record them, if you can show them to more people and say, hey, here's an awesome panel, and basically help them market it, help people gain experience being good panelists. Because I know there's a lot of complaints sometimes with first-time panelists, and they're like, oh, this is a crappy panel. They didn't know what they were doing. They don't know how to run a panel. It was very boring, not engaging. They didn't have enough this or that. People only learn those things through experience. And so you need to give a very conducive environment for people to gain that experience, support them, have workshops on what it takes to be a good panelist. Heaven knows we've taught enough of them. And like lift up the community so that they're more willing to provide that content for you in the future going forward, especially if it's different panels. And to the point, in chat, clear feedback after doing panels is key to learning, to becoming a better panelist. If you get nothing afterward from the audience or the con, you're just kind of left hanging, like, okay, was it a good panel? Did people like it? Can I do this again? Eh. And if all the feedback is bad, then they're not going to come back. You're not going to have any panelists. Panelists talk. If your con is very dismissive towards panelists, and if they don't give support and good feedback, people aren't going to want to offer content even if they're good panelists.
Thinking back, because I've been to hundreds of conventions at this point, I don't know how many I've been to. I can only remember one distinct instance where a convention asked attendees, do you have feedback on the panels that you attended? We would like to give that feedback to the panelists. And I thought, that's a fantastic idea. Because the one thing that conventions do so poorly is they don't prep panelists on what to expect, what the expectations are, how to work a panel, what are some best practices. It's all pretty much you figure it out on your own. And I know for us in particular, it really was. We hopefully found one online, maybe on YouTube. We watched 15-minute segments of it because that was the upload limit at the time, and hope for the best and try to figure out how to make a panel. We didn't have any kind of guidance. And
It
that
was trial
guidance
by
is
fire.
crucial. Yeah, it was trial by fire. Absolutely. It was just like, here's the hot coals, start walking on them. Good luck. You had to figure it all out on your own. And once you figure it out and you got into a groove, it's great. But that anxiety of doing all that work in between is incredibly stressful. And there's been a couple of times where it's like, is it even worth it for me to do this panel if I'm going to be stressing about this so much and definitely not getting feedback to know where I can improve, how I can be better at this? I don't know. I think conventions really need to be more involved in that panel process and transparent and open and explain to people like, this is what we want to see. This would be a great way to have a presentation and even show them the process of like, here's how we pick panels. I mean, they can do obviously examples so they don't make anybody feel left out or feel bad, but at least like be open about what the selection process is like. And then also sharing what the rules are too, because most people are probably not aware of this. Most conventions won't let you do in-character panels anymore. And there's a lot of very valid reasons for that why, because they were abundant in the 2000s, and there was a lot of controversies around those, and I'm just going to leave it at that. Most websites don't tell you, oh, you can't do in-person character panels. You don't know until you submit, and then they respond with, oh, you can't submit that. And it's like, oh. So I spent all this time prepping to make this panel happen, and now I'm being told I can't submit it after I submitted it. It would be really helpful if conventions were more open about what is and is not acceptable, so you don't put in all that prep work for nothing.
And once you have your panel schedule set, it would be really awesome if you did a couple of things. One is that in your schedule and your guide, however you do your guide, whether it's a physical book, online, whatever, have very clear descriptions of what the panel is.
Yes, please.
And when you read through them in advance, which you should, if any of them are unclear in any way, please ask the panelists to either add more information or rewrite it and tell them exactly what it is that you need out of it so that when attendees read these panels, there is zero doubt as to what that panel's about and where it is and when it is. And that way, attendees can make plans. And then also, if there is bandwidth for it, marketing those panels. So maybe each day on your social media, put the spotlight on a new panel on your schedule. Pick random panel on your schedule. Doesn't really matter which one. Just no favoritism. In other words, don't spam the same panel over and over. But highlight so that attendees know there is a panel about this thing. It is at this time in this place. Here's the description. Feel free to attend. That's all you have to do. You don't have to necessarily put the convention's reputation behind certain panels. It's more of just letting people know, hey, here's an opportunity for you. If you'd like to take it, great. If not, we have other content for you. That's all it is. But sometimes the schedules get so involved that it's really easy to miss stuff. And I feel like a lot of first-time and inexperienced panelists may get a boost from having people just know that it's there instead of, having these really sparsely attended panels. And I feel really bad for the panelists when there's like three people in the room. And you find out afterward when you start talking to people, and they're like, I didn't even know that panel was there. I would have happily gone if I would have just known it was there. And so that kind of support is also really helpful for attendees to know which panels they'd like to attend.
All right, so to kind of steer this back to the main topic, we kind of went a little off tangent
Yes.
there. So going to the same convention multiple times, my rule of thumb lately has been if it's a bigger event, we're talking like your Dragon Cons, your anime expos, I think a one and done is plenty. You get everything you need out of that experience. With Anime Expo, because it has definitely become industry focused, you will get access to some drops and new content before anyone else does. So it can feel like a little bit different from year to year. But I would say just overall, it's pretty much the same event every single time. It's just some slightly different industry people are involved. Dragon Con is kind of same. I enjoy Dragon Con. I've been a couple of times now. And even though I've had an enjoyable experience, it is still the same convention every time, just some slightly different guests and some slightly different panels. I already know what to expect. There's always going to be the parade. It's always going to be ungodly hot and humid. It's always spread across four hotels. You take over the entire downtown Atlanta area. It just is what it is. So when it's a bigger event, I'm like, once is plenty. I have absorbed everything that I need. Even with PAX, I've been to every PAX in the United States multiple times. They're all the same. There's no difference between any of them. It's the same thing. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. Smaller cons for me is where I feel like it's worth attending multiple times because for the most part, one, if they're starting off too, I want to support them. I want them to get better. I want them to improve. And if I see improvement, then yeah, I'll keep going. Cool stuff. Two, because they're local to me and I want to support my local peeps. So I will continue to support my local peeps. I think it's worth it to have that nice little niche community amongst us as fans, as cosplayers, as everything in between. So for me, it's worth going to it multiple times.
For me, big or small doesn't really matter. As long as there is different enough, I will go again. And even then, if a con is the same every year, I will know after 2 years because it's like, oh, everything is the same as last year. I may go back if the con is still around 5 or 10 years down the road just to see if anything changed.
Absolutely.
It may be worth periodically just checking back in with cons just to see, is it more akin to my vibe now? Is it more enjoyable to me if it wasn't enjoyable before, for whatever reasons you choose, and all reasons are valid. Just like I may find that 10 years ago, cons were just too crowded for me. I don't like having people packed like sardines into a convention center, like at Anime Expo that 1 year they had the fire marshals shut everything down. I'm not fond of that, but maybe if I went back after COVID, 5 years later, to find that maybe crowds are a little bit more breathable now. Now I can actually have room to enjoy things and not have people in my personal space. Great. That's perfectly fine, and maybe you find that with other cons too. So, I mean, even if you don't go every year, maybe just once in a while. As long as obviously it's affordable for you, please don't, be an adult about it. It's all I'm saying.
I think everybody's going to have their own preference on it, because I know some people who religiously go to Dragon Con every single year, have been doing it for 20 plus years, and they're not going to stop. So I get it. Everybody's a little bit different. I just know for me, I prefer the small convention feel, so I tend to focus on that a lot more now, mostly because I don't like all the crowds, but it gives me a chance to wander around and just experience a little bit of everything. I never feel like I miss out on stuff like you do at big events. And even if the big event is the same year after year after year, I still feel like I miss out on things. And that kind of makes me leave a little bit, I don't want to say disappointed, but kind of a little down, like, oh, I didn't get a chance to see.
Dissatisfied.
Dissatisfied. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see XYZ, but everything else was still the same. So I was like, oh, okay. Whereas with the small conventions, I feel like I get a taste of everything. And it just makes me feel a little bit more fulfilled out of it. So I think that's why I tend to stick with that a little bit more. But definitely with the lack of crowding too. Ooh, even though cons in general are getting very, 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 very crowded, unfortunately. But I think that's the reason why I tend to stick with small, and I see it as like I can invest going in multiple times. But I do love that idea too of, after 2 years, if it's still the same, give it a break. Maybe I'll go back in 5 years. Maybe I'll go back in 10 years and see if anything's changed. Maybe some stuff got updated. Maybe there's new panels, new content. Maybe they finally got new guests. Who knows?
The same goes for online cons too, for me. Anybody that streams their content like PAX does online, it's like, do I attend PAX virtually every year? Yeah, I do. Do I only attend for the new content and then maybe Acquisitions Incorporated? Yeah, that's it. I don't attend the same panels every year at PAX, and it's for all the same reasons. But I do check back in periodically just to see, like, is there anything shiny and new? In which case, I'll check it out. But of course, if you all in the audience would like to let us know your experiences with your local con, large or small, do you go every year? Do you only go every so often? Have you only been once? And why did you choose to do that? Feel free to let us know via any of our social media, which of course you can find here.
If you are watching us, the information is located right there underneath Amber, as well as in our show notes below. For those who are listening, visit us at cospod.org on Facebook and Instagram as Cosplay Podcast, on YouTube as CosPodcast, and on Blue Sky as CosPod.
Or if you feel more comfortable, you can also email us podcast@cospod.org, where you will get an answer from both of us, as well as Nick Cage themed memes.
Yay, I have a new folder. Let me use my memes.
We need to do some ghostwriter just because everything's on fire, which is the summers.
Figuratively speaking, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Otherwise, please stay safe, stay healthy out there, stay hydrated out there.
Please stay
Keep working on
hydrated.
all those co yeah, keep working on all those cosplays so that we can all see your smiling, shining faces at a convention local to us indoors ASAP. Otherwise, we will see you all next time at episode 317. Happy cosplaying, everybody.
Bye.